Sounds like you've been having lively discussions out there. And we got some excellent questions from all of you to return and ask our panelists. So I'm going to start with Rukmini again. You've been able to take some very unsexy things like impact evaluations, randomized controlled trials, data, and turn it into very sexy ways to scale. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit about the role of information and doing that work and scaling your model.
So do I have half an hour?
But you've got a minute.
I think making data sexy is not hard. I want to just give you a very, very short story, because I think stories illustrate the point. You can cut me off as soon as the story gets boring. When you go to a village and you start talking to people about education, immediately the conversation goes to, you know, my child didn't get this and the teacher didn't come and blah, 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 and so on. Whereas when you go to a village and you actually do an activity, for example, getting kids to read, the entire dynamic seems to change. And village after village, when you do this, one of the things we realized is that data becomes, I don't know about sexy, but data becomes interesting when you're generating something that you didn't know before. So if you go and say, does your child go to school, the whole village knows who goes to school and who doesn't go to school. Does the teacher come to school? Well, everybody knows that already. It's only you who don't. So if you're going to create something that's interesting, you have to generate it at the point that the people concerned haven't found that out before. And secondly, that you should be able to create a curiosity to figure out the next step. So I think what we've done is basically taken something like this, something that was not known. So again, in terms of access, the government has lots of figures. You know, there's MDG, there's all kinds of things. But this whole business of how many children can read, and can my child read, and can my neighbor's child read, this whole exercise, I think, by actually doing this on the ground and creating the interest and the curiosity, that's what made it. I mean, you're calling it sexy. We'll go back to India and say, now we are sexy. But, you know, so far it was just, like, interesting because it was something that was not known before.
If I'm allowed as a moderator to add a PS on that, Pratham's willingness to do an impact evaluation and actually open up their model to have rigorous impact evaluation and data generated out of it was part of what was very convincing for Hewlett and Gates to support their model to take it to scale. Okay, with that, I'm gonna ask Maria. One of the questions that came was, why can't kids in Mali read after 6 years of schooling? Is it teacher training? Is it materials? Is it other factors? But just your own assessment of why is it that these schools are failing children, even in the basics of learning to read?
I said further that teacher training, the quality of the teacher training is a problem in Mali. And also, even the trained teacher don't spend enough time at school when you look at the instructional time. And teacher gets...
Meaning they're absent a lot?
Yeah, absenteeism, yeah. And we have the big thing that you can read when you are a child of 7 years old. Your first language can be reading language can be a foreign language. So those combined, those things combined make our kids not able to read.
So foreign language, teachers not in the classroom, and the overall preparation of them before they get to the classroom. Okay.
That's I think, made it.
Combined solutions. Yeah. Michelle, you mentioned earlier that you had put money on the table as an incentive to try to get teachers to improve their performance and push the accountability agenda forward. What other incentives have you used to negotiate with the teachers' unions, or what other strategies have you been using to really drive forward this accountability agenda?
We've done a lot in terms of ensuring that teachers understand that we are also very interested in ensuring that they have the professional development and the support that they need. As the culture within public education becomes more and more data-driven in the country, what we know is that our teachers are very ill-equipped in terms of actually using that data and then using that data to inform their instruction moving forward. So the idea that we would have more robust professional development, better mentoring for new teachers who are coming into the system, and that sort of thing have definitely helped. I think, though, that people often ask me, you know, what is the thing that is going to allow us to recruit and retain the highest quality teachers overall? And I will say that, without a doubt, the best strategy for doing that is ensuring that you have higher quality teachers overall, because what the group of people who are most adamantly in support of me moving out the ineffective teachers are the truly effective teachers. They are so tired of being in a system where they get paid the exact same amount of money as the person down the hall who's doing absolutely nothing, who's actually where the kids might be moving backwards, and they're moving their kids, you know, two or three grade levels forward. That is incredibly frustrating as a professional. So those are the teachers who are saying to us, you know what, we absolutely have to change the system that we have in place to ensure that we have the best people, because they want to be in environments, they're not in it for the money, I mean, everyone knows that, but they want to be in environments where they know that the other people that they are collaborating with are of as high quality and caliber as they are.
Okay, as you all can see, the clock is ticking, but I want to ask you one last question and each of you to respond. So if donors in the room could provide funds for one thing to help your program or your community, what would it be? You've got 30 seconds. No.
Anybody jump in.
Okay. One thing for us will be useful is to have a literate environment. We are talking about children reading, but in Mali there is no literate environment. The only written things we can see is maybe some advertising in French.
So you mean books that are actually in books, their local languages, books, and reading materials for the kids.
Yeah. Literate environment.
I would agree with Maria. We do have more things, but we don't have enough for early grade reading for children. And if you have 200 million children, you need at least 200 million titles. Because once children begin to read, they are like demons. They will read up everything. So you need to have a continuous supply of appropriate, meaning at the right level, stuff for kids. So it's not just a production issue, it's a huge distribution issue to get supplies out to schools as fast as children can read it. So if there's anybody in this room who wants to do it, we're willing to talk to you.
And Michelle?
So I'm going to cheat and say two things. One would be that we are still seeking funding for our ability to actually implement this this differentiated pay contract, and I think it's going to really sort of change the game in this country about the teaching profession if we can move this contract forward. I'd say the second thing is that we are about to undertake an initiative that's in a very aggressive parental advocacy campaign. Right now in the district, we have a situation where a lot of the parents of our children don't have the sort of knowledge and information that they need to be effective advocates for their children. So as I was closing down 23 schools across the city, we had parents picketing and fighting me and yelling at me when, in fact, their school is such an underperforming school where only 10% of the kids are proficient or advanced. But the parents are sort of fighting me to keep the school open. So we believe that it's incumbent upon us to educate and empower the parents with good data and good information so that when only 10% of the kids in that school are performing at grade level, that they are coming to picket my office to shut that school down and to provide them with better options, not the other way around.
So we heard information, funding for the salary, and a lot about materials, all the way from development, production, distribution. So I just want to take, we are actually, we have a moment. I want to take an opportunity and just really thank our panelists. I felt very privileged to be able to moderate this, to ask questions of three inspiring women who have really been innovators in their countries, who've been leaders for education reform. And again, instead of leaning away from such a daunting problem, they've leaned right into it and found ways that they can actually improve what kids are learning in the classroom, and they've found very innovative ways to scale that. So my own thanks to them.
No. let me just mention we have a few, as we always do with Clean Global Initiative, a few commitments. And first, I just wanted to mention just a couple of more ideas that came from the table, and just wanted to put them out there. One common theme at the table discussions was, particularly in developing country context, but also even in the U.S., is that is the education of the parent. That educating mothers now as adults was a critical ingredient for improving quality. A second theme that came up a bit was whether we should have enough, we have enough kind of leadership academies or specifically for principals. And I want to flag that because on Friday, John Schnur, who runs New Leaders for New Schools, is going to talk about what they're doing for teachers in for creating a generation of principals who Michelle Rhee can hire to lead innovative, high-quality public schools. So that will be our Friday morning breakfast innovation panel. Another thing that came up a bit was the idea of contract, signing contract with parents or getting people to make commitments to certain types of things that they're doing. The table that was like way over influenced by being with an NBA star, Kevin Johnson, came back with their 3-point play, but I think it reflected a lot of them, which is engage principals, high quality teachers, and parents who are motivated contractually or otherwise to be involved. And then the last point that came up was the recreating the wheel part, whether we really, even in the U.S. or in developing countries, really, really know when you're expanding quality, do we really, really have systems, data, ways that people really understand how things work? And I'm going to say one thing about that. I think this is a place where you need human contact. I think the old idea you put up successful models on the internet, et cetera, I just have to tell you, I've been working this for years. I think what helps you is when somebody comes and sits down with your team and says, let me tell you what we did in our country, in our city, and people ask the question. So I think if we're talking about sharing quality data, we got to go back to old-fashioned, more face-to-face consulting. With that, one of the things we're doing this year that feeds off what we did at lunch is that at every session we're going to do a progress report, at least one progress report. And this, again, comes from the notion that we want to see the continuity, what people are doing. So we have one here and then just a couple of announcements. And it's Brenda Moosley, from Worldwide Director of Education at Intel Corporation. She leads their $100 million annual global commitment to accelerate math, science, and engineering education. And Brenda, would you like to come up and give a short progress report of the Intel commitment?
Thank you. It's a rather humbling task to follow the panel that was up here today talking on a topic that is very passionate to my heart and to Intel. On behalf of Intel and the Intel Foundation, I'm just really happy to be here today to have a chance to just update you on how we're doing on our teacher training commitment that we made last year. Before I do that, though, I just want to mention that our commitment to teachers goes back to the beginning of our company. This year is the 40th anniversary of Intel, which is hard to believe. I've been there a lot of that time, so it's really hard to believe. But starting at the beginning of our company, we made a very big commitment to education, believing that education is the way that we can give back to the world in the most powerful way. And as we've been discussing here at the Clinton Global Initiative, just about any problem you can think of can be solved through education. So we're very committed to this. About 10 years ago, our chairman, Craig Barrett, who's really world-renowned for his views on education and how to alleviate poverty in the world, had a vision that we would go train teachers as a way to really give back to the world and as a way to help teachers be effective in the classroom. And he has a very famous saying that has been used many times since that point in time 10 years ago, that we believe that computers are not magic, it's the teachers that are the magic. And so with that vision, he made a commitment at that time on behalf of Intel to go train 100,000 teachers in the world, and it seemed like a daunting task at the time. And since that point, we've trained over 5 million teachers around the world in over 40 countries. And it's really staggering for me to even think about it. I'm pleased and honored to have been a good part of that in the last 4 years. But last year, we were very honored to be a part of the Clinton Global Initiative. And I was here with Craig, where we made an important commitment in the next phase of our teacher training, which was to go train 1.5 million teachers in 15 countries in a new online teacher professional development model. This is very critical. It's a critical way that we're going to scale teacher professional development out over the next 5 to 10 years, and we're getting started in a very big way. I was asked to just talk about the challenges. There have been many. Our progress is good. We've translated the teacher training in the standard face-to-face model into online in 40 countries. We have piloted and we're doing evaluation now in over half of those 15 countries we committed to. The challenges are many as we work with teachers on who's ready for online training, as we work with governments, as we work with infrastructure. But we're very committed to deliver the 1.5 million teachers over the next 5 years in online, as well as continuing to do the face-to-face models where that makes sense in developing countries. So we're very pleased about that. Just a brief word about something that I think you'll find very interesting and exciting, a new commitment that we're making today from Intel, which is, I just want to hold it up because I think this is going to tell the whole story in a show-and-tell model, just like in school. The eGranary Digital Library, this is just an incredible new capability. Intel's working with WiderNet of the University of Iowa, and I'm pleased to introduce Cliff Misson, who's sitting over here at the table up front. You may want to talk to him at the end of the session today. This digital library is bringing internet content to communities, schools, hospitals around the world that do not have internet access. It's incredible. You know, 80% of the population still doesn't have access to the internet today. This little box right here has 1,200 websites and CD-ROMs. It provides 10 million documents. And it is, we've currently got this installed in, 250 locations in a number of different countries. Hopefully this time next year, it'll be so many more than it is today. So if you're interested in finding out more about this or how you can get one yourself, which was one of my questions, please talk to Cliff at the end of the session or to me here over the next couple of days. Again, thank you. And again, it's just our honor and pleasure on behalf of Intel to be here and to be in a room with people who share the same passion for education and teacher training and helping all the people in the world to come into the knowledge economy. So thank you again.
Thanks, Jean. First commitment we wanted to announce is from Humana, People to People, and Marie Lichtenberg, if she could come up. I think one of the big issues in expanding access and quality is teachers. And those of us who work on reaching the Millennium Goal know that would mean 18 million new teachers by 2015. And Humana People to People has come through very big at the Clinton Global Initiative with four commitments. I'm going to talk about the two to education. They are creating four new teacher training colleges in Malawi that they believe over time will reach and affect the quality of 1 million students. They are also partnering with the government of Mozambique, even with the president of Mozambique and the first lady, to increase girls' education by providing 2,000 scholarships for young women to become qualified primary school teachers. And these two education commitments total over $20 million. And so we're very, very grateful for this commitment. Thank you. And then tomorrow, one of the things that will be happening that Clinton Global Initiative is involved in is a very large announcement with heads of states, CEOs. It's being called the Class of 2015 Pledge to bring lots of different groups into the advocacy world of advocating for universal education. I have a different hat I wear sometimes. It's just the chair of the U.S. Global Campaign for Education. And I have some great partners in crime that work on bringing forward the message to policymakers that we've reached that goal, and we have to do it in the U.S. as well. And so I'd like Joanne Carter, the new executive director of Results, Paul Zeitz, the executive director of Global AIDS Alliance, and their top education person, David Gardner. They are pledging to, in this very critical year, commit to doing a new advocacy initiative to launch at a higher level to reach universal education and support a new global initiative or new global fund to get us to the goal of universal education. And I will say that, you know, it's very interesting that we said on our third panel we're going to bring health and education together. Well, these are two organizations that didn't need us to do that panel. Results is a broad-based poverty group. They have seen that connection and been champions of education. And Global AIDS Alliance is really one of the top very few partners in education because they saw very early that if you cared about HIV/AIDS, you had to care about universal education. So we thank them for their commitment. Thank you. Some people wear a lot of different hats. Mesa Jalbooth, I've known in a few different capacities. She used to be, in terms of advocacy, the person in the Canadian government who listened, who cared, who really worked with the NGO community, was a real partner. So it was it was a loss but a gain when she became the director of research and strategic planning for Queen Rania, a great, great champion of girls in universal education. Madrasati means my school, and the Queen, through the Jordan River Foundation with Cisco and the Jordan Education Initiative, is outfitting 500 Madrasati schools with computers and interactive whiteboards in the classroom, and set up these classrooms with wireless networks that will improve the quality of education for children throughout Jordan. This will also provide these schools with teachers with the training they need to improve the sustainable use of this technology. This is valued at $25 million over 5 years. Mesa herself and the Queen, they are not in this for the short term. They are at everything. They're leading all of the private sector, public sector efforts. So on behalf of Mesa and Queen Rania, thank you very much for this commitment. Seth Wah, CEO of Deutsche Bank Americas, Jay Kimmelman, New Globe Schools, Steve Hardgrave from Gray Matters. Deutsche Bank, along with its partners, is working to strengthen the reach of low-cost private schools to reach poor children and communities that would have no access to education right now. They will train the teachers and principals and school leaders and help to improve the management of resources to ensure that these schools are accountable and run smoothly. Over the next 2 years, they're pledging to do schools that would affect 100,000 poor children in India and Kenya, valued at $8 million over 2 years. And you see with this, as well as what Queen Rania is doing, people really taking the holistic approach from access to teacher quality to the technology. Thank you very much for your commitment. And finally, Kariki, the organization, Dr. Barbara Bobby Kirshen, the executive director of Kariki. Kariki has been able to secure too many partners to name here, which is a good problem. But Criqui and their partners commit to build a huge repository of free, high-quality, open-source educational resources. They are making sure the communities can create and share high-quality educational material so that they can leverage each other's knowledge and expertise. This innovative open sourcing of education will expand and develop learning opportunities for millions of teachers and students worldwide. And we thank you for being part with so many partners in this Clinton Global Commitment. We are unquestionably trying to fit in a lot of people because we really care so much about everybody who makes an education commitment here. And we just think being able to see people with your own eyes and see their commitment, the more we do that, the more not just recognition we give, but the more partnerships are created. Before we go, I just want to let you know what's going on tomorrow morning. One of the new things also is people said they would like more informal ability to kind of partner and network with groups of their choice. And so we took your comments and thoughts, and based on that, there will be from 7:45 to 8:45 tomorrow morning, and I will be up there, at the Empire East and Empire West room in the second floor. We'll be doing working group chairs. There are no, this is not formal, but we're going to have breakfast table topics, and they are technology and education. Organizations that suggested that topic were Microsoft and Criqui, as you can understand. Education for girls and women who do not have access to education, Pyramus Global Advisors, Blank Rome, some of the people suggested it. Early childhood education, Global Fund for Education, Cindy, and on to Adams on my staff. The entrepreneurship education for orphans and vulnerable children, FXB International and the Whole Child Institute suggested that. Five, education HIV/AIDS. We will be talking about that with Beatrice Ware in our third panel, but Nakia AIDS Orphan School wanted to do a table on that. Entrepreneurship education, NIFTY, an organization I work closely with, Agora Partnership in Nicaragua. Seven, education reform for the future, teachers training and improving quality. I think we got a good jump start there. And Avisa Lau Institute, Rural China Education Foundation, Humana, Center for Evolutionary Neuroscience. Eight, education for rural children. Nine, education and service learning for youth empowerment. James Richardson and Son, YPOWO Presidents, Action Network, Capital Corporations. And finally, education, religion, and peace. In the Muslim world, we have a very interesting commitment from Margaret Cohn on Friday about this. But Radiant Group, Eli and Eddie, the Broad Foundation, and others. So we just wanted to let you know that we are trying to listen. We'll see how this goes. We'll get the feedback. Maybe we'll do it a little different. But it's a chance for people to come and a little bit more informally network on some of the topics that we won't get to mention. And if somebody could figure out a way to actually expand the Sheraton, have more rooms, we could do way better breakfast than this. But this is our limitation now. So thank you very much for our first day on the education side. And we will see you tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Table facilitators, please join Paige at the back of the room for your debriefing. AS table facilitators, meet Paige at the back of the room.